Mr. President, members of the Senate of the United States, ladies and gentlemen, I am overwhelmed by the warmth and spontaneity of the welcome of the American people, of whom you are the representatives. I did not know that I was to speak to you today at the Senate, except to say, how do you do? I'm so very glad to see you, and to bring the greetings of my people to the people of America. However, just before coming here, the Vice President told me that he would like to have me say a few words to you. I'm not a very good extemporaneous speaker. In fact, I am no speaker at all. But I'm not so very much discouraged because a few days ago, I was at Hyde Park and went to the President's library. Something I saw there encouraged me and made me feel that perhaps you will not expect overmuch of me in speaking to you extemporaneously. What do you think I saw there? I saw many things, but the one thing which interested me most of all was that in a glass case, there was the first draft of one of the President's speeches, a second draft, and on up to the sixth draft. Yesterday, I happened to mention this fact to the President and told him that I was extremely glad that he had to write so many drafts when he is such a well-known and acknowledgedly fine speaker. His reply to me was that sometimes he writes 12 drafts of a speech. So my remarks here today, being extemporaneous, I am sure you will make allowances for me. The traditional friendship between your country and mine has a history of 160 years. I feel, and I believe that I'm not the only one who feels this way, that there are a great many similarities between your people and mine, and that these similarities are the basis of our friendship. I should like to tell you a little story which will illustrate this belief. When General Doolittle and his men went to bomb Tokyo, on their return, some of your boys had to bail out in the interior of China. One of them later told me that when he landed on Chinese soil and saw the populace running toward him, he just waved his arm and shouted the only Chinese word he knew, Mei Kuo, Mei Kuo, which means America. Literally translated from the Chinese, it means beautiful country. This boy said that our people greeted him like a long-lost brother. He further told me that he had come home when he saw our people, and that was the first time he had ever been to China. I came to your country as a little girl. I know your people. I've lived with them. I spent the formative years of my life amongst your people. I speak your language, not only the language of your hearts, but also your tongue. So coming here today, I feel that I am also coming home. I believe, however, that it is not only I who am coming home. I feel that if the Chinese people could speak to you in your own tongue, or if you could understand our tongue, they would tell you that basically and fundamentally, we are fighting for the same cause. That we have identity of ideals, that the four freedoms which your president proclaimed to the world resound throughout our vast land as the gong of freedom, the gong of freedom of the United Nations and the death knell of the aggressors. I assure you that our people are willing and eager to cooperate with you in the realization of these ideals because we want to see to it that they do not echo as empty phrases, but become realities for ourselves, for our children, for our children's children, and for all mankind. How are we going to realize these ideals? I think I should tell you a little story which just came to my mind. As you know, China is a very old nation. We have a history of 5,000 years. When we were obliged to evacuate Hong Kao and go into the hinterland to carry on and continue our resistance against aggression, the Generalissimo and I passed one of our fronts, the Changsha Front. One day we went into the Hangyang Mountains where there are traces of a famous pavilion called Rub the Mirror Pavilion, which was built over 2,000 years ago. It will perhaps interest you to hear the story of that pavilion. 2,000 years ago, near that spot was an old Buddhist temple. One of the young monks went there, and all day long he sat cross-legged with his hands clasped before him in an attitude of prayer and murmured, Amitabha Buddha, Amitabha Buddha, Amitabha Buddha. He murmured and chanted day after day because he hoped that he would acquire grace. The father prior of that temple took a piece of brick and rubbed it against the stone hour after hour, day after day, and week after week. The little acolyte, being very young, sometimes cast his eyes around to see what the old father prior was doing. The old father prior just kept on his work of rubbing the brick against the stone. So one day, the young acolyte said to him, Father Prior, what are you doing day after day rubbing this brick on the stone? The Father Prior replied, I'm trying to make a mirror out of this brick. The young acolyte said, but it is impossible to make a mirror out of a brick, Father Prior. Yes, said the Father Prior, and it is just as impossible for you to acquire grace by doing nothing except murmur Amita Buddha all day long, day in and day out. So my friends, I feel that it is necessary for us not only to have ideals and to proclaim that we have them, it is necessary that we act to implement them. And so to you, gentlemen of the Senate, and to you ladies and gentlemen in the galleries, I say that without the active help of all of us, our leaders cannot implement these ideals. It is up to you and to me to take the heart the lesson of Rub the Mirror Pavilion. I thank you.
Mr. President, members of the Senate of the United States, ladies and gentlemen, I am overwhelmed by the warmth and spontaneity of the welcome of the American people, of whom you are the representatives. I did not know that I was to speak to you today at the Senate, except to say, how do you do? I am so very glad to see you, and to bring the greetings of my people to the people of America. However, just before coming here, the Vice President told me that he would like to have me say a few words to you. I'm not a very good extemporaneous speaker. In fact, I'm no speaker at all. But I am not so very much discouraged because a few days ago I was at Hyde Park and went to the President's library. Something I saw there encouraged me and made me feel that perhaps you will not expect overmuch of me in speaking to you extemporaneously. What do you think I saw there? I saw many things, but the one thing which interested me most of all was in a glass case there was the first draft of one of the President's speeches, a second draft, and so on and on up to the sixth draft. Yesterday, I happened to mention this fact to the President and told him that I was extremely glad that he had to write so many drafts when he is such a well-known and acknowledgedly fine speaker. His reply to me was that sometimes he writes 12 drafts of a speech, so my remarks here today, being extemporaneous, I am sure you will make allowances for me. The traditional friendship between your country and mine has a history of 160 years. I feel, and believe that I am not the only one who feels this way, that there are a great many similarities that there are between your people and mine, and that these similarities are the basis of our friendship. I should like to tell you a little story which will illustrate this belief. When General Doolittle and his men went to bomb Tokyo, on their return, some of your boys had to bail out in the interior of China. One of them later told me that he had to bail out of his ship and that when he landed on the Chinese soil and saw the populace running toward him, he just waved his arm and shouted the only Chinese word he knew, Mei Kuo, Mei Kuo, which means America. Literally translated from the Chinese, it means beautiful country. This boy said that our people laughed and almost hugged him and greeted him like a long-lost brother. He further told me that he thought that he had come home when he saw our people and that it was the first time he had ever been to China. I came to your country as a little girl. I know your people. I have lived with them. I've spent the formative years of my life amongst your people. I speak your language, not only the language of your hearts, but also your tongue. So coming here today, I feel that I am also coming home. I believe, however, that it is not only I who am coming home. I feel that if the Chinese people could speak to you in your own tongue, or if you could understand our tongue, they would tell you that basically and fundamentally, we are fighting for the same cause. that we have identity of ideals, and that the four freedoms your president proclaimed to the world resound throughout our vast land as the gong of freedom of the United Nations, and the death knell of the aggressors. I assure you that our people are willing and eager to cooperate with you in the realization of these ideals, because we want to see to it that they do not echo as empty phrases, but become realities for ourselves, for our children's children, and for all mankind. How are we going to realize these ideals? I think I shall tell you a little story which just came to my mind. As you know, China is a very old nation. We have a history of 5,000 years. When we were obliged to evacuate Hankou and go into the hinterland to carry on and continue our resistance against aggression, the Generalissimo and I passed one of our fronts, the Changsha Front. One day we went to Hengyang Mountains, where there are traces of a famous pavilion called Rub the Mirror Pavilion, which was built over 2,000 years ago. It will perhaps interest you to hear the story of that pavilion. 2,000 years ago, near that spot, was an old Buddhist temple. One of the young monks went there, and all day long he sat cross-legged with his hands clasped before him in an attitude of prayer and murmured, Amitabha Buddha, Amitabha Buddha, Amitabha Buddha. He murmured and chanted day after day because he hoped that he would acquire grace. The father prior of that temple took a piece of brick and rubbed it against a stone hour after hour, day after day, week after week. The little acolyte, being very young, sometimes cast his eyes around to see what the old father prior was doing. The old father prior just kept on his work of rubbing the brick against the stone. So one day the young acolyte said to him, Father prior, what are you doing day after day rubbing this brick on the stone? The father prior replied, I'm trying to make a mirror out of this brick. The young acolyte said, but it is impossible to make a mirror out of brick, father prior. Yes, said the father prior, and it is just as impossible for you to acquire grace by doing nothing except murmur Amitabha Buddha all day long, day in and day out. So, my friends, I feel that it is necessary for us not only to have ideals and to proclaim that we have them, it is necessary that we act to implement them. And so to you, gentlemen of the Senate, and to you, ladies and gentlemen in the galleries, I say that without the active help of all of us, our leaders cannot implement these ideals. It is up to you and to me to take to heart the lesson of the Rub the Mirror Pavilion. I thank you.
Mr. President, members of the Senate of the United States, ladies and gentlemen, I am overwhelmed by the warmth and spontaneity of the welcome of the American people, of whom you are the representatives. I did not know that I was to speak to you today at the Senate except to say, how do you do? And I am so very glad to see you. And to bring the greetings of my people to the people of America. However, just before coming here, the Vice President told me that he would like to have me say a few words to you. I am not a very good extemporaneous speaker. In fact, I am no speaker at all. But I am not so very much discouraged, because a few days ago I was at Hyde Park and went to the President's library. Something I saw there encouraged me and made me feel that perhaps you will not expect overmuch of me in speaking to you extemporaneously. What do you think I saw there? I saw many things, but the one thing which interested me most of all was that in a glass case there was the first draft of one of the president's speeches, and a second draft, and on up to the sixth draft. Yesterday, I happened to mention this fact to the president, and told him that I was extremely glad that he had to write so many drafts when he is such a well-known and acknowledgedly fine speaker. His reply to me was that sometimes he writes 12 drafts of a speech. So, my remarks here today, being extemporaneous, I am sure you will make allowances for me. The traditional friendship between your country and mine has a history of 160 years. I feel, and I believe that I am not the only one who feels this way, that there are a great many similarities between your people and mine, and that these similarities are the basis of our friendship. I would like to tell you a little story which will illustrate this belief. When General Doolittle and his men went to bomb Tokyo, on their return, some of your boys had to bail out in the interior of China. One of them later told me that he had to bail out of his ship and that when he landed on the Chinese soil and saw the populace running toward him, he just waved his arm and shouted the only Chinese word he knew, Meguo, Meguo, which means America. Literally translated from the Chinese, it means beautiful country. This boy said that our people laughed and almost hugged him and greeted him like a long-lost brother. He further told me that he thought that he had come home when he saw our people, and that this was the first time he had ever been to China. I came to your country as a little girl. I know your people. I have lived with them. I have spent the formative years of my life amongst your people. I speak your language, not only the language of your hearts, but also your tongue. So coming here today, I feel that I am also coming home. I believe, however, that it is not only I who am coming home. I feel that if the Chinese people could speak to you in your own tongue, or if you could understand our tongue, they would tell you that basically and fundamentally, we are fighting for the same cause. That we have identity of ideals. That the four freedoms which your president proclaimed to the world resound throughout our vast land as the gong of freedom of the United Nations and the death knell of aggressors. I assure you that our people are willing and eager to cooperate with you in the realization of these ideals. Because we want to see to it that they do not echo as empty phrases, but become realities for ourselves, for our children, and for our children's children, and for all mankind. How are we going to realize these ideals? I think I should tell you a little story which just came to my mind. As you know, China is a very old nation. We have a history of 5,000 years. When we are obliged to evacuate Hankou and go into the hinterland to carry on and continue our resistance against aggression, the Generalissimo and I passed one of our fronts, the Changsha Front. One day, we went to the Hengyang Mountains, where there are traces of a famous pavilion called Rub the Mirror Pavilion, which was built over 2,000 years ago. It will perhaps interest you to hear the story of that pavilion. 2,000 years ago, near that spot was an old Buddhist temple. One of the young monks went there, and all day long he sat cross-legged with his hands clasped before him in an attitude of prayer and murmured, Amita Buddha, Amita Buddha, Amita Buddha. He murmured and chanted day after day because he hoped that he would acquire grace. The father prior of that temple took a piece of brick and rubbed it against a stone hour after hour, day after day, and week after week. The little acolyte, being very young, sometimes cast his eyes around to see what the old father prior was doing. The old father prior just kept on his work of rubbing the brick against the stone. So one day the young acolyte said to him, Father Prior, what are you doing day after day, rubbing this brick on the stone? The father prior replied, "I am trying to make a mirror out of this brick." The young acolyte said, "But it is impossible to make a mirror out of a brick, Father Prior." "Yes," said the Father Prior, "and it is just as impossible for you to acquire grace by doing nothing except murmur Amita Buddha all day long, day in and day out." So, my friends, I feel that it is necessary for us not only to have ideals and to proclaim that we have them, it is necessary that we act to implement them. And so to you, gentlemen of the Senate, and to you, ladies and gentlemen in the galleries, I say that without the active help of all of us, our leaders cannot implement these ideals. It is up to you and to me to make the heart to take to heart the lesson of the Rub the Mirror Pavilion. I thank you.
Mr. President, members of the Senate of the United States, ladies and gentlemen, I am overwhelmed by the warmth and spontaneity of the welcome of the American people, of whom you are the representatives. I did not know that I was to speak to you today here at the Senate, except to say, how do you do? I'm so very glad to see you. And to bring the greetings of my people to the people of America. However, just before coming here, the Vice President told me that he would like to have me say a few words to you. I am not a very good extemporaneous speaker. In fact, I am no speaker at all. But I am not so very much discouraged because a few days ago I was at Hyde Park and went to the President's library. Something I saw there encouraged me and made me feel that perhaps you will not expect overmuch of me in speaking to you extemporaneously. What do you think I saw there? I saw many things, but the one thing which interested me most of all was that in a glass case there was the first draft of one of the President's speeches, a second draft, and on up to the sixth draft. Yesterday, I happened to mention this fact to the President and told him that I was extremely glad that he had to write so many drafts when he is such a well-known and acknowledgedly fine speaker. His reply to me was that sometimes he writes 12 drafts of a speech. So my remarks here today, being extemporaneous, I am sure you will make allowances for me. The traditional friendship between your country and mine has a history of 160 years. I feel, and I believe that I am not the only one who feels this way, that there are a great many similarities between your people and mine, and that these similarities are the basis of our friendship. I should like to tell you a little story which will illustrate this belief. When General Doolittle and his men went to bomb Tokyo on their return, some of your boys had to bail out in the interior of China. One of them later told me that when he landed on Chinese soil and saw the populace running towards him, he just waved his arm and shouted the only Chinese word he knew, Mei Kuo. Mei Kuo, which means America. Literally translated from Chinese, it means beautiful country. This boy said that our people laughed and almost hugged him, and he greeted them like a long-lost brother. He further told me that he thought that he had come home when he saw our people, and that he was the first, and that it was the first time he ever had been to China. I came to your country as a little girl. I know your people. I have lived with them. I spent the formative years of my life amongst your people. I speak your language, not only the language of your hearts, but also your tongue. So coming here today, I feel that I am also coming home. I believe, however, that it is not only I who am coming home. I feel that if the Chinese people could speak to you in your own tongue, or if you could understand our tongue, they would tell you that basically and fundamentally, we are fighting for the same cause. That we have identity of ideals, that the four freedoms which your president proclaimed to the world resound throughout our vast land as the gong of freedom, the gong of freedom of the United Nations and the death knell of the aggressors. I assure you that our people are willing and eager to cooperate with you in the realization of these ideals, because we want to see it that they do not echo as empty phrases, but become realities for ourselves, for our children, and for our children's children, and for all mankind. How are we going to realize these ideals? I think I shall tell you a little story which just came to my mind. As you know, China is a very old nation. We have a history of 5,000 years. When we were obliged to evacuate Hankou and go into the hinterland to carry on and continue our resistance against the aggression, the Generalissimo and I passed one of our fronts, the Changsha Front. One day we went into the Hengyang Mountains where there are traces of a famous pavilion called Rub the Mirror Pavilion, which was built over 2,000 years ago. It will perhaps interest you to hear the story of that pavilion. 2,000 years ago, near that spot, was an old Buddhist temple. One of the young monks went there, and all day long he sat cross-legged with his hands clasped before him in an attitude of prayer, and murmured, "Amitabha Buddha, Amitabha Buddha, Amitabha Buddha." He murmured and chanted day after day because he hoped that he would acquire grace. The father prior of that temple took a piece of brick and rubbed it against a stone hour after hour, day after day, and week after week. The little acolyte, being very young, sometimes cast his eyes around to see what the old father prior was doing, and the old father prior just kept on his work, rubbing the brick against the stone. So, one day, the young acolyte said to him, "Father Prior, what are you doing day after day rubbing this brick on the stone?" The Father Prior replied, "I am trying to make a mirror out of this brick." The young acolyte said, "But it is impossible to make a mirror out of the brick, Father Prior." "Yes," said the Father Prior, "and it is just as impossible for you to acquire grace by doing nothing except murmur Amitabha Buddha all day long, day in and day out." So, my friends, I feel that it is necessary for us not only to have ideals and proclaim that we have them, it is necessary that we act to implement them. And so to you, gentlemen of the Senate, and to you, ladies and gentlemen in the galleries, I say that without the active help of all of us, our leaders cannot implement these ideals. It is up to you and to me to take the heart of the lesson of Rub the Mirror Pavilion. I thank you.
Mr. President, members of the Senate of the United States, ladies and gentlemen, I'm overwhelmed by the warmth and spontaneity of the welcome of the American people, of whom you are the representatives. I did not know that I was to speak to you today at the Senate, except to say, how do you do? I am so very glad to see you, and to bring the greetings of my people to the people of America. However, just before coming here, the Vice President, told me that he would like to have me say a few words to you. I'm not a very good extemporaneous speaker. In fact, I am no speaker at all, but I am not so very much discouraged, because a few days ago I was at Hyde Park and went to the President's Library. Something I saw there encouraged me and made me feel that perhaps you will not expect overmuch of me in speaking to you extemporaneously. What do you think I saw there? I saw many things, but the one thing that which interested me most of all was that in a glass case there was the first draft of one of the President's speeches, a second draft, and on up to the sixth draft. Yesterday, I happened to mention this fact to the President and told him that I was extremely glad that he had to write down so many drafts when he is such a well-known and acknowledgedly fine speaker. His reply to me was that sometimes he writes 12 drafts of a speech. So my remarks here today, being extemporaneous, I am sure you will make allowances for me. The traditional friendship between your country and mine has a history of 160 years. I feel, and I believe that I am not the only one who feels this way, that there are a great many similarities between your people and mine, and that these similarities are the basis of our friendship. I should like to tell you a little story which will illustrate this belief. When General Doolittle and his men went to bomb Tokyo, on their return, some of your boys had to bail out in the interior of China. One of them later told me that he had to bail out his ship, and that when he landed on Chinese soil and saw the populace running toward him, he just waved his arm and shouted the only Chinese word he knew, Mei Kuo, which means America. Literally translated from the Chinese, it means beautiful country. This boy said that our people laughed and almost hugged him and greeted him like a long-lost brother. He further told me that he thought that he had come home when he saw our people, and that this was the first time he had ever been to China. I came to your country as a little girl. I know your people. I have lived with them. I spent the formative years of my life amongst your people. I speak your language, not only the language of your hearts, but also your tongue. So coming here today, I feel that I am also coming home. I believe, however, that it's not only I who am coming home. I feel that if the Chinese people could speak to you in your own tongue, or if you could understand our tongue, that they would tell you that you basically and fundamentally we are fighting the same cause. That we have identity of ideals, that the four freedoms which your president proclaimed to the world resound throughout our vast land as the gong of freedom, the gong of freedom of the United Nations, and the death knell of the aggressors. I assure you that our people are willing and eager to cooperate with you in the realization of these ideals, because we want to see to it and they do not echo as empty phrases, but become realities for ourselves, for our children, for our children's children, and for all mankind. How are we going to realize these ideals? I think I should tell you a little story which just came to mind. As you know, China is a very old nation. We have a history of 5,000 years. When we were obliged to evacuate Hangzhou, and go into the hinterland to carry on and continue our resistance against aggression, the Generalissimo and I passed one of our fronts, the Hangzhou Front. One day we went to the Hengyang Mountains, where there are traces of a famous pavilion called Rub the Mirror Pavilion, which was built over 2,000 years ago. It will perhaps interest you to hear the story of that pavilion. 2,000 years ago, near that spot was an old Buddhist temple. One of the young monks went there, and all day long he sat cross-legged, with his hands clasped before him in an attitude of prayer, and murmured, "Amita Buddha, Amita Buddha, Amita Buddha." He murmured and chanted one day, he chanted day after day, because he hoped that he would acquire grace. The father prior of that temple took a piece of brick and rubbed it against a stone, day, hour after hour, day after day, week after week. The little acolyte, being very young, sometimes cast his eyes around to see what the old father prior was doing. The old father prior just kept on his work of rubbing the brick against the stone. So one day, the young acolyte said to him, "Father Prior, what are you doing day after day rubbing this brick on the stone?" The father prior replied, "I am trying to make a mirror out of this brick." The young acolyte said, "But is it impossible to make a mirror out of a brick, Father Prior?" "Yes," said the father prior, "and it is just as impossible for you to acquire grace by doing nothing except murmur Amita Buddha all day long, day in and day out." So my friends, I feel that it is necessary for us not only to have ideals and to proclaim that we have them, it is necessary that we act to implement them. And so to you, gentlemen of the Senate, and to you ladies and gentlemen in the galleries, I say that without the active help of all of us, our leaders cannot implement these ideals. It is up to you and to me to take to heart the lesson of the Rub the Mirror Pavilion. I thank you.
Mr. President, members of the Senate of the United States, ladies and gentlemen, I am overwhelmed by the warmth and spontaneity of the welcome of the American people of whom you are the representatives. I did not know that I was to speak to you today at the Senate except to say, how do you do? I'm so very glad to see you, and to bring you the greetings of my people to the people of America. However, just before coming here, the Vice President told me that he would like to have me say a few words to you. I'm not a very good extemporaneous speaker. In fact, I'm no speaker at all. But I'm not so very much discouraged because a few days ago I was at Hyde Park and went to the President's library. Something I saw there encouraged me and made me feel that perhaps you will not expect over much of me in speaking to you extemporaneously. What do you think I saw there? I saw many things, but the one thing which interested me most of all was that in a glass case there was the first draft of one of the President's speeches, a second draft, and on up to the sixth draft. Yesterday I happened to mention this fact to the President and told him that I was extremely glad that he had to write so many drafts when he is such a well-known and acknowledgedly fine speaker. His reply to me was that sometimes he writes 12 drafts of a speech. So my remarks here today, being extemporaneous, I am sure you will make allowances for me. The traditional friendship between your country and mine has a history of 160 years. I feel, and I believe that I am not the only one who feels this way, that there are a great many similarities between your people and mine, and that these similarities are the basis of our friendship. I should like to tell you a little story which will illustrate this belief. When General Doolittle and his men went to bomb Tokyo, on their return, some of your boys had to bail out in the interior of China. One of them later told me that he had to bail out of his ship and that when he landed on Chinese soil and saw the populace running toward him, he just waved his arm and shouted the only Chinese word he knew, Mei Kuo, which means America. Literally translated from the Chinese, it means beautiful country. This boy said that our people laughed and almost hugged him and treated him like a long-lost brother. He further told me that he thought he had come home when he saw our people, and that was the first time he had ever been to China. I came to your country as a little girl. I know your people. I have lived with them. I spent the formative years of my life amongst your people. I speak your language, not only the language of your hearts, but also your tongue. So coming here today, I feel that I am also coming home. I believe, however, that it is not only I who am coming home. I feel that if the Chinese people could speak to you in your own tongue, or if you could understand our tongue, they would tell you that basically and fundamentally, we are fighting for the same cause. That we have identity of ideals, that the four freedoms which your president proclaimed to the world resound throughout the vast land, and the gong of freedom, the gong of freedom of the United Nations, and the death knell of the aggressors. I assure you that our people are willing and eager to cooperate with you in the realization of these ideals, because we want to see to it that they do not echo as empty phrases, but become realities for ourselves, for our children's children, and for all mankind. How are we going to realize these ideals? I think I shall tell you a little story which just came to my mind. As you know, China is a very old nation. We have a history of 5,000 years. When we were obliged to evacuate Hankou and go into the hinterland to carry on and continue our resistance against aggression, the Generalissimo and I passed one of our fronts, the Changsha Front. One day we went into the Hangyang Mountains, where there are traces of a famous pavilion called Rub the Mirror Pavilion, which was built over 2,000 years ago. It will perhaps interest you to hear the story of that pavilion. 2,000 years ago, near that spot was an old Buddhist temple. One of the young monks went there, and all day long he sat cross-legged with his hands clasped before him in an attitude of prayer and murmured, Amita Buddha, Amita Buddha, Amita Buddha. He murmured and chanted day after day because he hoped that he would acquire grace. The father prior of that temple took a piece of brick and rubbed it against a stone, hour after hour, day after day, and week after week. The little acolyte, being very young, sometimes cast his eyes around to see what the old father prior was doing. The old father prior just kept on his work of rubbing the brick against the stone. So one day the young acolyte said to him, Father prior, what are you doing day after day rubbing this brick on the stone? The father prior replied, I am trying to make a mirror out of this brick. The young acolyte said, but it is impossible to make a mirror out of a brick, Father Prior. Yes, said Father Prior, and it is just as impossible for you to acquire grace by doing nothing except murmur Amita Buddha all day long, day in and day out. So, my friends, I feel that it is necessary for us not only to have ideals and to proclaim that we have them, it is necessary that we act to implement them. And so to you, gentlemen of the Senate, and to the ladies and gentlemen in the galleries, I say that without the active help of all of us, our leaders cannot implement these ideas. It is up to you and to me to take to heart the lesson of the Rub the Mirror Pavilion. I thank you.
Mr. President, members of the Senate of the United States, ladies and gentlemen, I am overwhelmed by the warmth and spontaneity of the welcome of the American people, of whom you are the representatives. I did not know that I was to speak to you today at the Senate except to say, how do you do? I'm so very glad to see you. And to bring the greetings of my people to the people of America. However, just before coming here, the Vice President told me that he would like to have me say a few words to you. I am not a very good extemporaneous speaker. In fact, I am no speaker at all. But I am not so very discouraged because a few days ago I was at Hyde Park and went to the President's Library. Something I saw there encouraged me and made me feel that perhaps you will not expect overmuch of me in speaking to you extemporaneously. What do you think I saw there? I saw many things, but the one thing that interested me most of all was that in a glass case, there was the first draft of one of the president's speeches, a second draft, and on up to the sixth draft. Yesterday, I happened to mention this fact to the president and told him that I was extremely glad that he had to write so many drafts when he is such a well-known and acknowledgedly fine speaker. His reply to me was that sometimes he writes 12 drafts of a speech. So in my remarks here today, being extemporaneous, I am sure you will make allowances for me. The traditional friendship between your country and mine has a history of 160 years. I feel, and I believe that I am not the only one who feels this way, there are a great many similarities between your people and mine, that these similarities are the basis of our friendship. I should like to tell you a little story which will illustrate this belief. When General Doolittle and his men went to bomb Tokyo, on their return, some of your boys had to bail out in the interior of China. One of them later told me that he had to bail out of his ship, and when he landed on Chinese soil and saw the populace running toward him, he just waved his arm and shouted the only Chinese word he knew, Mei Kuo, which means America. Literally, translated from the Chinese, it means beautiful country. This boy said that our people laughed and almost hugged him and greeted him like a long-lost brother. He further told me that he thought that he had come home when he first saw our people, and that was the first time he had ever been to China. I came to your country as a little girl. I know your people, and I have lived with them. I spent the formative years of my life amongst your people, and I speak your language, not only the language of your hearts, but also your tongue. So coming here today, I feel that I am also coming home. I believe, however, that it is not only I who am coming home. I feel that if the Chinese people could speak to you in your own tongue, or if you could understand our tongue, they would tell you that basically and fundamentally, we are fighting for the same cause. That we have identity of ideals, that the four freedoms which your president proclaimed to the world resound throughout our vast land as the gong of freedom, the gong of freedom of the United Nations, and the death knell of the aggressors. I assure you that our people, willing and eager to cooperate with you in the realization of these ideals, because we want to see to it that they do not echo as empty phrases, but become realities for ourselves, for our children, for our children's children, and for all mankind. How are we going to realize these ideals? I think I shall tell to you a little story which just came to my mind. As you know, China is a very old nation. We have a history of 5,000 years. When we were obliged to evacuate Hankou and go into the hinterland to carry on and continue our resistance against aggression, the Generalissimo and I passed one of our fronts, the Changsha Front. One day we went into the Hangyang Mountains, where there are traces of a famous pavilion called Rub the Mirror Pavilion, which was built over 2,000 years ago. It will perhaps interest you to hear the story of that pavilion. 2,000 years ago, near that spot was an old Buddhist temple. One of the young monks went there, and all day long he sat cross-legged with his hands clasped before him in an attitude of prayer and murmured, Amita Buddha, Amita Buddha, Amita Buddha. He murmured and chanted day after day because he hoped that he would acquire grace. The father prior of that temple took a piece of brick and rubbed it against a stone hour after hour, day after day, and week after week. The little acolyte, being very young, sometimes cast his eyes around to see what the old father prior was doing. The old father prior just kept at his work of rubbing the brick against the stone. So one day, the young acolyte said to him, Father Prior, what are you doing day after day rubbing this brick on the stone? The Father Prior replied, I'm trying to make a mirror out of this brick. The young acolyte said, but it is impossible to make a mirror out of the brick, Father Prior. Yes, said the Father Prior, and it is just as impossible for you to acquire grace by doing nothing except murmur Amita Buddha all day long, day in and day out. So, my friends, I feel that it is necessary for us not only to have ideals and to proclaim that we have them, it is necessary that we act to implement them. And so to you, gentlemen of the Senate, and to you, ladies and gentlemen in the galleries, I say that without the active help of all of us, our leaders cannot implement these ideals. It is up to you and to me to take the heart, take to heart the lesson of the Rub the Mirror Pavilion. I thank you.